All right, I think this is on. Welcome everybody to this new chat. I'm here. My name is Macon Phillips. My handle is @Macon44, and I'm joined with Jay Carney, whose handle is @PressSec. Jay, thanks for doing this. This is something new. We're just going to try for a few minutes here. We've got the live camera on here at the White House. Bunch of questions already coming in on the hashtag #1Q, which stands for first question. And we're going to dive right into it and try to get a few answers out. And if this works, maybe do this again sometime. So as you're watching, you can share the link for this at whitehouse.gov/live, and then just join the conversation at #1Q, first question. So thanks everyone for joining. So Jay, let's just kick this off with the obvious question. Is first question all a ploy just to get more followers?
Yes,
Okay.
absolutely. The fact is that my handle @PressSec does have a lot of followers. I'm grateful for that, but you know, part of my job is to try to communicate what the president's doing, what he's thinking, to as many people as possible. And the briefing is a tried and true institution where I interact and take questions with and take questions from the White House press corps. But there are a lot of other ways to reach people, and this is a great avenue to do that.
All right. Well, just as soon as we posted this, we got a response from our friends over in the Senate, in the Republican part of the Budget Committee, who asked, "Does the White House have any comment on the vote today on the president's budget? Will it be embarrassing if it goes down 0-97 again?" So, what's your comment on that?
Sure, I'd love to talk about that. This is another gimmicky effort by Republicans in Congress. It's regrettable because everyone who has studied the issue of the challenges that we face as a country, our budget challenges, our medium and long-term fiscal challenges, knows that there is one solution, which is to take a balanced approach to deal with our deficit and debt problems by cutting non-defense discretionary spending, which the president has done. He has already signed into law reductions in non-defense discretionary spending. That's all the spending that isn't linked to formulas like Medicare and Social Security and is not defense spending. So every domestic program, he's reduced that to a level of GDP that is lower than under any president since Dwight Eisenhower. That is a fact. It is an irrefutable fact. The other element that has to be included is entitlement reform. The president, in his own budget proposal, has put forward some very progressive reforms to entitlements that will strengthen Medicare, for example, and Medicaid. The third element has to be increased revenues. The fact is, for the 10 years prior to President Obama taking office, the middle class was being tremendously squeezed, even before the Great Recession, while the wealthiest Americans were seeing their incomes increase dramatically. We have relatively low tax rates, some of the lowest income tax rates that we've had in 50-odd years. The president believes that everybody should get a fair shot, get a fair shake, and play by the same set of rules, and that they should do their fair share, and that includes asking the wealthiest to contribute a little bit more.
Okay. Our next question comes in from Ethan Manuel, who asks, "Will the president block Shell's plans to drill for oil offshore in the Arctic, Chukchi and Beaufort Seas, ocean this summer?"
Well, I'll have to be honest with you that I don't have a specific response to that question. What I can tell you is that the president is committed, as a general principle, to expanding our domestic oil and gas production, but doing it in a safe and responsible way. He believes that that is achievable, and the last 3.5 years, the 3.5 years that he's been president, prove that he's right. Domestic oil and gas production is up under this president, and that's in spite of the fact that we obviously had a terrible oil spill in the Gulf, and as a result of that, the president ensured that we instituted new standards that would make sure that producers there, companies that would drill there, had the capacity to deal with a spill the size of the Blue Horizon spill that we saw a couple of years ago. And now we're back to leasing again. He believes that we can expand domestic oil and gas production in a safe and responsible way. And it's part of his all-of-the-above energy approach, which he believes is the only way we can deal with our long-term energy security needs. So that we become less dependent on foreign sources of energy. That's a position that's in stark contrast, unfortunately, to Republicans who don't share his vision for investing in clean energy and renewables. We've already seen the amount of energy produced in this country through clean energy technology, renewable technology, double under his presidency, and further investments in that area is essential, not just because it will increase our independence, our energy independence, but because those industries will create good jobs, and we need those jobs here in the United States of America.
All right. Another one comes, well, actually, before I do the next, let me just sort of remind people, that those of you just hearing about this, that we're answering questions that we're seeing at the #1Q hashtag. That stands for first question. We've got Jay Carney at PressSec here. I'm Macon Phillips at Macon 44. And we're just trying to take a few minutes to answer as many questions as we can on the hashtag, and we'll just dive right back in on this. At Fig Druten, it's a clever name, asks, how come women are faring so bad in the current economy?
That's an excellent question, and I can say a couple of things about it. The recession that we experienced in this country, the very worst recession that probably almost everyone who's watching this has experienced in his or her lifetime, because it was the worst recession since the Great Depression in the 1930s, caused in its early years dramatic job loss for men in particular. Industries like construction and others that were heavily, that were dominated by men suffered the most significant job loss. That's evened out, and women have, at the other end of the recession, at the as we were coming out of it, saw significant job loss. So on balance, I think both men and women have suffered through this recession significantly. On the broader question of women in the economy and women in the labor force, this president is absolutely committed to ensuring not just that women and all Americans are able to find work as we emerge from this recession, but that women who do find work are paid at a fair rate. And that is why the very first piece of legislation that this president signed into law was the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act, that codifies into law that women should be paid equally for equal work. That's a commitment this president has made from the beginning of his time in office, and he'll carry it forward as long as he is in office.
Right. Okay. Inda Lynch has a question about the European debt crisis, and basically asks, has the White House considered financial intervention to stabilize the euro?
Our approach to the eurozone crisis has been to consult with our European counterparts, the president with his counterparts, Secretary of the Treasury Geithner with his counterparts, and to offer our counsel and advice. It is our belief that our conviction that the Europeans have it within their own capacity to deal with this, and also it is in their interest to deal with the eurozone crisis. This is an ongoing dialogue that we've had with our European counterparts for a long time now. At the G20 in Cannes, France, the president had many discussions about this with European allies. He will continue those conversations at the G8, which the United States is hosting at Camp David on Friday and Saturday. And what I can say is that we believe that this is a European problem that the Europeans need to solve. We will advise them and consult with them and offer wisdom from experience that we gained from dealing with our own financial crisis and economic crisis. But the Europeans have the capacity to do it, and we expect that they will.
Okay. There's starting to pick up here on the, again, #1Q. People are asking all sorts of questions. And I'm sure, as you know, a lot of people are critical, a lot of people are supporting. Some people are sort of getting involved in this, I think, just at the beginning. But there's a question, I think, that does come from someone who's a little bit more critical that gets, I think, a larger theme here that you might be able to address. It's @RG_here, who asks, why is Obama not talking about his record and instead trying to drive people apart? And there's an awful lot of division sort of in the conversation here. Can you talk a little bit about your reaction to that overall criticism?
Well, I would say a couple of things. The president frequently talks about his record. I travel with him everywhere he goes, and he speaks very plainly about the measures that his administration took in the midst of the worst economic free fall since the 1930s, a situation where we now know the economy was shrinking by 9% in the fourth quarter of 2008, the last quarter of the last presidency, and a situation where in January of 2009, the economy was hemorrhaging jobs at a rate of 800,000 per month. The policies the president put into place, unfortunately without Republican support by and large, have resulted in a situation where that free fall has been reversed, halted and reversed. The economy has been growing steadily for 11 straight quarters. We have had private sector growth now, job growth for 26 straight months, more than 4 million jobs, more than a million jobs in the last 6 months alone. Unfortunately, because the hole was so deep that was dug by this recession, we still have a significant distance to go. There are still too many people who are looking for work who haven't found it. There are still too many homeowners who have homes that are underwater, their mortgages are underwater. And the president is constantly discussing with Congress, as he will today at a lunch that's happening as I speak with congressional leadership, both Republicans and Democrats, just about 25 feet from here, the need for all of us to work together in a bipartisan way to take action on the economy that will help it grow and help it create jobs. The president put out a congressional to-do list last week that includes five items that Congress should be able to act on in a bipartisan way. They're the kinds of things that Republicans and Democrats have both supported in the past, including giving tax incentives to small businesses to hire more people, assisting veterans returning from Afghanistan and those who have returned from Iraq to find work, helping homeowners to take advantage of these historically low interest rates to refinance their homes, and other measures. These are things that would be very beneficial to the economy, very beneficial to the middle class, and they're the kinds of things that are not ideological, are not things that should divide Democrats and Republicans. They're things that we could come together and act on right away.
Okay. Well, here's more of a fun one that you probably wish you got asked more, but you just give you a chance maybe to talk about some things you don't get to talk about. At Mika4Life asks, who are some of the unsung heroes of the White House that Obama thinks makes the White House run but don't often get credit? And just, this isn't a layup for the online folks, but you know, who are the folks that you work with that you think need a little bit of a credit?
Besides you, Macon?
Exactly.
Look, there are a lot of people who are not in the public eye who make every White House run, and that's certainly the case here, and the president has a tremendous staff, and I think that a person who comes to mind, because as I mentioned, the president's having lunch right now with Speaker of the House John Boehner, Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, and Senators Reid and McConnell, is Rob Neighbors. He's the president's congressional liaison. His job is to be the chief interactor for the White House with Congress. He's got a wealth of experience. He's an unsung hero, to be sure, and does an excellent job. There are just countless people who fit into that category, and everybody has the unique privilege of working here, puts in long hours, but I know I feel this way, and everybody I work with feels this way, that it's an absolute privilege to do so, to work for your country, to work to try to make it a better place.
Yeah. Okay, at P. Trent Olson asks, a question that doesn't get mainstream attention. That's what he said. What progress has this administration made on refugee and humanitarian issues?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. It's a broad question, and I think the answers are more specific to regions where there have been refugee or humanitarian crises. As you know, probably, or at least I hope you do, the president focused very closely on the situation in Darfur, in Sudan, and that is, although now we have Sudan and South Sudan, tensions are still a real problem in that part of the world, and the president's team is very focused on that and preventing that region from experiencing another kind of crisis, the likes of which it did in the not too distant past. The president believes that part of a successful foreign policy, an important element of that has to be so-called soft power, the ability of the United States to achieve some of its national security and foreign policy goals through non-military means and through diplomatic means and through humanitarian means. One of the things we're doing in, as we contend with the terrible situation in Syria is ensuring that humanitarian assistance is delivered to the Syrian people in the midst of this appalling assault by the Assad regime on its own people. So those are a few of the examples that I can cite, but it's certainly an issue that the president takes very seriously.
Okay. I know we only have a few minutes left here before you have to run, but at Caring GOP asks a question. Since manufacturing sector has been the best source of U.S. middle class jobs, when can we expect a resurgence?
Well, I think that's an excellent question because we don't have to guess when to expect a resurgence. There has been a tremendous resurgence in manufacturing jobs in this country since the recovery began. In fact, it's been one of the truly bright signs in our economy in the last couple of years. I don't have the statistics with me, but I think it's somewhere in the order of 400,000 or plus jobs that have been created in the manufacturing sector recently. One of the true stellar performers within manufacturing is the automobile industry. And the president, as you probably know, took decisive action in the midst of that economic freefall during the recession to ensure that Chrysler and General Motors did not liquidate, did not go out of business. And that required federal action. There was no other alternative. And in return for taxpayer assistance, the president insisted on that those companies reform themselves in a way that would make them more competitive. And the result has been really incredibly welcome, and that is that General Motors is now the number one automaker in the world again. Chrysler is succeeding, as is Ford. And the American automobile industry is not only back on its feet, it's leading the world again. It's incredible to think about the fact that just a few short years ago, there was a real possibility that the, if not the entire industry, that a lion's share of it would be lost and that we would, in the United States, no longer be a major manufacturer of automobiles. Thanks to the president's decisive action, that's not the case. And American automobiles are back on top. They're quality products. And because that industry has been revived, they're adding jobs, especially in the heartland, in the Midwest, where which is the center of our automobile industry, which is a very good thing indeed.
Great. Okay. Well, that's all the time we have for today. I know you've got to run, so I really appreciate you making the time. Hopefully, this is something we'll be able to do again. We learned a lot about kind of how this works, appreciate everyone joining on the #1Q hashtag. And again, you can follow Jay. This isn't just to get followers, but I'm sure you wouldn't mind at PressSec. You're heading to the briefing in a little
bit? Yeah, I'm going to go and do the old-fashioned form of Q&A in the White House briefing room in probably about 45 minutes, half an hour.
So you can check that out, same website you're at right now, whitehouse.gov/live. Thanks again, everyone, for joining, we'll be in touch soon.
Thank you.